is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, it is Wednesday. Thanks for joining me for the conversation. Appreciate your help and your support here. Georgia, no peach for Democrats. John Ossoff losing. Well, not reaching 50%, which is the same as losing. He had to get to 50%. $9 million dumped into that race, a whopping $1,700 from Georgia residents. All true, $1,700. The rest came from out of state. A killer in Fresno screaming Allahu Akbar as he targeted white people to kill, innocent white people for no particular reason. And the Facebook killer. Well, he killed himself, as I said he probably would. We'll talk about all of that, but I want to explore something with you here a little bit because of how horrendous it is and how it struck me. And the damage that it does. The recent news that a Michigan doctor had been arrested for performing female genital mutilation on little girls. It seems shocking, and it is, but unfortunately it's a sad reality to millions of girls and women around the world, including right here in the United States. And if you don't believe it, you need to wake up. And I say enough, because I'm tired of good people looking the other way and news networks ignoring the barbaric practice altogether as if it doesn't exist. Mutilation of little girls and their genitals in pursuit of their culture or their religious practice. I'm sorry, but that so-called culture has no place in America. None. It is a vulgar practice that should be rejected by all people from all backgrounds. This is not a discussion that goes one step further, but the secretive practice of female genital mutilation, or FGM, continues to happen in many nations around the world. It also happens in the shadows right here in America. It happens right here in Michigan, according to the FBI. The arrest recently of Dr. Jumana Nargawala for FMG, female genital mutilation, FGM, excuse me, which, according to the World Health Administration, is the partial or total removal of the clitoris, and it's sometimes referred to as a clitorectomy. It's a brutal procedure that leaves its victims with a lifetime of pain and complications, as they are often done in poor conditions. A federal judge refused to assign bail in the case after concluding Nargawala is a flight risk from these charges. The charges stem from the butchery of 2 7-year-old girls who were brought here from Minnesota by their mothers. Their mothers brought them here, telling them it was a special girls' adventure. Now, make no mistake, the practice is strictly illegal in America unless a medical reason can be substantiated, which is nearly impossible. In 2012, Congress enacted Passed and was able to get enacted and signed a new law that would cut and end vacation cutting. Vacation cutting, the practice of taking little girls outside of the United States for the mutilation during summer recess or other holidays. Can you imagine? The sickening procedure is performed predominantly in Muslim communities and cultures and is far more prevalent than most people would like to believe. The World Health Organization says the harmful procedure has been performed at least 500,000 times on women here in the U.S., even though it's been banned since 1996. Some say the number in the United States is actually far, far higher. worldwide, the number of girls and women who have been victimized by this practice, estimated more than 200 million. 200 million. By any definition, and I want to be very clear about this, by any definition, female genital mutilation is sexual violence. It is a violent crime committed only against girls and women. It is a violation so incredibly intimate and personal that the scars left behind are often permanent and debilitating. It must be brought to an end. It must be stopped now, no matter what it takes. It must be dragged kicking and screaming into the open and exposed in the light for what it is. It is a crime against civilized society. It has no place, should be shunned by all people and all nations. Of course, it won't be. I mean, people will say things in polite society. They'll say that it's terrible, and they'll get these looks on their faces. But it will remain the scourge it is because of spineless politicians and people who falsely claim the moral high ground. Sadly, many on the left will ignore the whole harrowing idea and ideology that leads to such bloody outrages against little girls, and instead will continue to focus on the mindless talking points and trying to label political opponents as racist, xenophobic knuckle draggers when we say we want to reduce the amount of immigration we have. We want to control the number of refugees here that come here. We want to make sure that we vet people more thoroughly. Well, you're a racist. You're a xenophobe. The 44-year-old Northfield doctor, by the way, had no previous criminal record and is also an emergency room doctor with the Henry Ford Health System. The illegal procedures were allegedly performed at a Livonia clinic so that it could be sterile. And I ask you, where's the outcry? Where is the outcry from the moderate Muslim communities about this medieval brutalization of little girls by adults who hold them down and cut them in the most private areas possible? Cases like this one show us that such horrors are not reserved for faraway third world nations, but can happen right here in our own backyards. How many girls and women must be mutilated before we stand up and say no more? How many daughters, wives, sisters, and mothers must be slashed in this barbaric way before we say this must end? Take a moment and consider this. Take a moment and consider the eyes and the horror of a little girl held down on a table by the very people she is supposed to trust and love, only to have her legs pulled apart and a knife cut away pieces of her flesh. You too feel the shame and know we cannot let it continue. You know this is wrong. I believe Dr. Jumana Nargwala should be sentenced as severely as any person convicted of first-degree criminal sexual conduct. It's the same. It might be worse in some aspects, in some regards. Any lesser sentence would be another crime against her victims. Any lesser conviction, any lesser sentence would be another crime against her victims. Wake up, my friends. This cannot continue, not in my America. I'm Steve Gruber.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
All right, I'll pop those phone lines open here for a couple of minutes if you want to talk about female genital mutilation and this barbaric practice for which this Michigan doctor now facing criminal charges. No bail set, of course, because she's a flight risk. Now, how could that be? I thought she lived here. You do the math. Rick is checking in from Muskegon today. Rick, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Just thought this was a practice that was a long ways away from the U.S. So the way I feel is, the doctor's being held for it, but what about the parents? They should be held to the same standard and be against the law there and be held accountable, because those little 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, they don't make that decision to do that. That doctor, he could say he's just doing his job.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It was a female doctor, by the way. The doctor was a woman, and the parents It was their mothers that brought them. You make a very good point here, Rick. It was these two children, these 2 7-year-olds that were butchered, came from Minnesota so they could kind of sneak out of Minnesota, get the procedure done, and come back. But it's their mothers and this woman that performed the procedures, this doctor, should all be held accountable. I agree with you. And in fact, maybe some sort of child neglect or abuse charges for parents that allow this to go on.
Absolutely. That's horrific. And I just can't. It's just like torturing the kids. So,
Rick, I appreciate you checking in.
To any of their kids would be held accountable, and they should be too.
Absolutely. There's no question. You know, if we took a kid and knowingly cut off the end of their little finger, if you took a kid and cut off, knowingly had a, you know, somebody cut off the end of your child, son or daughter's little finger, you would be held accountable. Now, would you not? You would face, Rick is exactly right. So when you talk about female genital mutilation in the pursuit of some theology, well, that theology doesn't fly here in America. That theology will never fly here in America, I dare say. 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. LJ checking in from Lansing now. LJ, what's on your mind? LJ, how you doing?
Steve, good. Hey, this is a little different, but the other night there was apparently about 20 or 25 young men in their early 20s in Greektown in downtown Detroit that went on some kind of rioting beating spree, kind of like the Muslims do. And for some funny reason, all the information that I've been trying to find out about that has been slammed shut. And nobody wants to talk about it, from law enforcement right up to right into the news organization. What's going on with that?
Well, it was reported on CBS Detroit. I know that. And there's video apparently available. This is from WWJ. It happened in downtown Detroit. Then starts a video that shows about 25 to as many as 40 men punching, kicking, brutally beating people on the streets of Greektown, one of Detroit's most popular hotspots. In the video, one man is lying with his head over the curb, appearing unconscious, very badly injured. He gets punched and kicked as a cell phone filming crowd of young men shouts and laughs, quickly becoming known as the Greektown Brawl. This happened Saturday night. The Saturday night fight was caught on video, posted to Facebook.
Oh, there we go again with Facebook and all their wonderful contributions to society.
Yeah, so here you go. They've got at least 8 of the perpetrators have been identified thus far, according to James Craig. He, of course, the police chief in Detroit. You wonder what's going on, and then you wonder why people want the ability and the right to defend themselves. Thanks for checking in, LJ. Let's go to Michelle now. She's checking in Lansing as well. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hi. The screener guy was asking if it was like how they circumcise boys with that female thing, but then it kind of, he told me a little bit, was like, oh my God, that's not like what they do to boys, because boys is removing something that's a little bit extra, not removing something necessary.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, the boys are removing for health reasons, because the way the skin works on boys is it traps, you know, junk, if you will, and can create infections and so forth. That is not at all what this is about. This is to dissuade women from enjoying sexual contact. It is to, you know, some people believe it creates more healthy babies that, you know, have a higher chance of survival. It's a bunch of nonsense rooted in medieval thought, or maybe beyond, Michelle. It's barbaric. It's brutal. And it's a violent sexual crime, is as close as I can figure.
That's what it sounds like to me, because I was like, oh, it's just, oh.
It's awful. Michelle, thank you for checking in. Let's go to Mark checking in now from Grand Rapids. Mark, welcome to it.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you never hear any criticism from the left on stuff like this. It could be this or pornography or whatever, any kind of abuse of women. There's never any... a peep from the left.
Let me ask you this, Mark. Do you agree with my point of view that somebody that performs this procedure should be treated the same way as anybody that's charged with a first-degree criminal sexual conduct? Because this is, I would say, as violent, as horrendous as rape. This is This is, you're doing it to little girls, for God's sake. You're cutting off body parts of little girls.
The charge should be worse than that. I mean, that's torture.
Yeah, it's horrendous. It's a violent sexual crime, Mark, that's for sure. I appreciate you checking in. And you're right. This is not something that the people on the left are going to discuss. Instead, they're going to take people like Mark and Michelle and myself and point at us and say, you're xenophobic, you're racist, you're a bigot. No, I'm not. I'm somebody who thinks that this is a disgusting practice that has no place in America, never will have a place in America, and you're damn right we're going to defend our culture and our heritage and our people and this nation against such outrages as attacking little girls and conducting female genital mutilation. It's time to stand up for who we are and not accept openly and look the other way when this sort of thing happens. It is repugnant, it is repulsive, and it will not stand. Thank you, folks, for checking in. We'll have some calls later in the program as well. That number, if you need it, 888-900-9966. We'll slide a couple more in if we can get them. Take a quick break and be right back on the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
And don't worry, we'll revisit that topic tomorrow. A lot of phone calls, can't get them all in today, so we're going to set some time aside tomorrow during the second hour so that we can discuss more in detail this topic and make sure that everybody has a full understanding of what it is, why it's here, and why it has to be stopped, and why Children's Protective Services, the state government, and others need to step in, not just the FBI and the feds, but others as well. I'm going to shift gears and head a different direction for a little bit here. The question, can China play a role in solving the North Korean problem? Some say the United States should develop a diplomatic strategy to persuade Beijing to help. I think that's already happened. I think that happened when President Xi was at Mar-a-Lago, when we were sending cruise missiles into Syria. I believe that began to happen. I believe we heard the president say he will take a lesser deal on trade if the Chinese help us get North Korea off the table. However, in the end, I don't know that that will happen. I believe that it'll be our responsibility to address the North Korean scourge, and we cannot have a North Korean dictator, this petulant child, staring at us with a gun in his hand and us staring back, looking down the barrel of a crazed dictator. That's not a way to move forward for the United States. Doug Bandow here, senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Doug, am I right or wrong?
Well, I think that we can do more to try to get China on board, and it's certainly better to try to get them to put a lot of economic pressure on the North than to get involved in a shooting war with North Korea.
Well, I don't think anybody wants to be in a shooting war particularly. But with Kim Jong-un saying he'll fire missiles basically whenever he wants, he'll test nuclear weapons whenever he wants, he will threaten South Korea, Japan, the United States, whenever he wants. At some point, after nearly 70 years, somebody has to put an end to it. At some point. Is that right or wrong?
Well, I'd like to see them end, but the question is, how do you put an end to it? You know, the idea of military preemption, or, you know, kind of preventive war, could have devastating consequences. The problem is the North Koreans can destroy Seoul, the capital of South Korea. So you start talking military action, you get the South Koreans very nervous.
Well, so far, they're still with us. If the South Koreans abandon our position, then I would consider other options. They have not done that. Japan has not abandoned our position. In fact, both South Korea and Japan seem to, at least thus far, embrace our position, which now includes three aircraft carrier strategic strike groups moving into the region.
Well, they like our position in terms of defending them. They are not interested in having us start launching military strikes against the North, because their view is the North would respond. The North would lose any war. But, you know, a conflict like that would be extraordinarily costly, primarily to the South Koreans. They'd be the battlefield.
Well, here's the thing. This is where Donald Trump's America First policy comes into full view, because Donald Trump realizes that if the United States military launches a strike against North Korea in a preemptive measure, yes, South Korea will become a part of the battlefield. There's no question. But in Donald Trump's estimation, I'm going to say that that's a better scenario than 5 years down the line, North Korea having nuclear weapons and pointing that gun at the United States. That puts Americans at risk in San Francisco and Los Angeles, possibly elsewhere. Of course, Hawaii would be in the crosshairs as well. So Donald Trump has a bigger game, it appears to me. And yes, he would have a concern with the South Koreans, but you don't sit idly by while they develop nuclear weapons in the North. They can later point at the United States.
Well, look, we lived through a Cold War where the Soviet Union had missiles pointed at us. The question is, how do you respond? There's no evidence that Kim Jong-un and those folks are suicidal. They've long been concerned that we'll get into
Hold on, Doug. There is every bit of evidence that Kim Jong-un is not sane, is not like dealing with Stalin or Brezhnev or any of them, frankly. He is not balanced. He makes these threats all of the time. We didn't hear that from Joseph Stalin or Leonid Brezhnev or any of those. They didn't say, hey, we're going to nuke America. We'll nuke America whenever we want. I didn't hear that.
Well, he makes those threats from a position of weakness. That is, this is a very weak system. It's a very poor country. It would lose any conventional war. You know, those threats are made as a desperation attempt at deterrence. You know, he wants his virgins in this world, not the next. This is not a guy who wants to go up in flames and meet, his maker.
Well, if you're right about that, then why does he continue to make these threats? Why does he continue to threaten and posture the United States when he knows the carrier groups are coming, when he knows that Donald Trump is a guy who is serious about such things based on his behavior in Syria and in Afghanistan? Why would he continue to push that if he's as, sane as you assume he is, Doug?
Because when the carrier groups come, that's when they feel most threatened. That's when it's most important to convince us not to actually use them. You know, they look at the world and they see a world in which the U.S. has taken out, Afghanistan's government, taken out Iraq's government. Libya is an example they look at where we convinced Gaddafi to give up his nuclear weapons and missiles, and then we took him out. So, they live in a world in which they view themselves as being very endangered. They make all these stupid threats. It's an evil regime. We want it to go away. But you don't want to trigger something and get a war today that you spent 70 years preventing.
Yeah, well, I don't want to allow them to continue down the path to get nuclear weapons either, Doug. And really, you've offered no solutions in that regard.
Well, there is no easy solution, but the idea of starting a war with them is the worst. My solution is to put greater pressure on the Chinese as well as offer the Chinese something positive to help out. The Chinese don't want a United Korea allied with us with U.S. troops on their border. They don't want to have a North Korea that collapses, puts millions of refugees across the border. We've got to talk to them about how to handle those situations. So they'd be willing to help us by trying to cut off economic aid to the North. They won't do that if they think we'll take advantage of the situation.
You know, it's not like China has a magic wand with North Korea either. I mean, let's be honest. Doug Bandow here from the Cato Institute, and I get the whole, let's see if we can work it out diplomatically. We've done that for 67 years. And for 67 years, we've stared across a line at the 38th parallel at each other with people very close to war. The war was never ended. The war continues today because no peace treaty was ever signed, of course. An end of hostilities is as far as we ever got, Doug. And here's the North continuing. You know, how many United Nations resolutions do they have to break? They've broken six so far for it to be enforced. Or we just continue to ignore it and therefore further proving the United Nations has no value whatsoever on the planet.
Well, I mean, it's long been evident that UN resolutions don't solve anything. The problem is, what do you do about a heavily armed regime like this if you don't want to start a war that kills hundreds of thousands of South Koreans?
I think it's time to reunite the peninsula. I think it's time to reunite the peninsula. If it was done in Germany, it should be done in Korea. Time to bring them all back together. It's time to end the Korean conflict altogether. And the only way you do that is to get rid of Kim Jong-un in some fashion. I mean, you cannot sit here. The guy's 33 years old. He's certifiably nuts. And you can't just sit idly by while he says, I'm going to, develop nuclear weapons. I'm going to develop my ICBMs. I'm going to do any damn thing I want. And you're not going to do a thing about it. And from your point of view, Doug, we're not going to do anything about it.
Well, I'm certainly not going to start a war over it because my objective is to make sure there isn't a war.
Well, what if there's not a diplomatic solution, Doug? What if you don't get a diplomatic solution from Beijing? What if you just let him continue on then and just, well, we don't want to have a war, so we'll let him have the weapons. What kind of a policy is that?
Well, it's a better policy than starting a war.
Okay.
I mean, the challenge here is, and we lived through it with the Soviet Union, we lived through it with Mao Zedong, is that kind of starting a conflict in a case like that probably is the worst option. You know, the question is you look for alternatives along the way.
There is no alternative to North Korea having nuclear weapons. Your plan is no plan at all, Doug. I hate to say that, but And all due respect, that's no plan at all. To let North Korea have weapons is better. Nuclear weapons is better than starting a war. So they can start it later. I'll give you 10 seconds for the last word.
If you talk to anybody who lives in Seoul, South Korea, they'll tell you that sending in the bombers is no plan either.
Well, they probably wouldn't care for it.
There's no good option here. North Korea gives us no good options.
Fair enough. Doug Bandoff from the Cato Institute. Good conversation. Thank you.
Sure thing.
We have a Doug Bandoff from Cato. Back in a moment.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
All right, take a deep cleansing breath for a moment. Take a little break from all the tough stories of the day. We're going to relax a little bit. Did I mention that Ivy and I and our little boy, we caught fish over the weekend. Couldn't believe it. Forecast in a row, bam, bam, bam. You know, the pond was on fire. Cooled off after that, but it's a little early. But right in the shallows, picked off a couple, just tossing them back. Nothing serious. Just having fun with it. And so what I want to talk about now is some of the fun things you can do outside. The weather has been nothing short of spectacular. And last week, we welcomed a new contributor to the program, Ron Rademacher. We welcome him back now. Ron, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Steve. Glad to hear the fish are biting.
Well, a little bit in some places. You're a travel writer, author, speaker, storyteller, dancer, purveyor, a man who stands on his head when needed. Many adventures up Ron Rademacher's sleeve, that's for sure. I mean, you've traveled Michigan probably more than anybody I know.
Well, I've been running around these back roads for about 17 years now, trying to find fun stuff to go do.
And you found a lot of it. In fact, last week, I think we didn't give it justice. We said, you know what? Ron knows so much about so many things around the state that gives people the ideas that maybe they can run off for half a day, or maybe even a whole weekend or longer, depending on what you share here. So a couple of things you mentioned last week I want to revisit. First of all, the Trillium Ravine. Now, this is something you talk about where the Trillium's really the flower of Michigan, if you will. It's kind of rare, not that easy to find, but you know a place, and if you've got right at the very end right now, but they might still be there. Where is this place? Tell me about it.
The Trillium Ravine is between Niles and Buchanan. That's down in Berrien County. And it's actually down in a little nature conservancy on Geyer Road. That's G-E-Y-E-R. All you got to do is go to U.S. 12 and 31 and follow Geyer Road. This thing is big. It's a couple of hundred yards long, 40 feet deep, and they are still in there. In fact, the really rare ones are coming up right now, the Prairie Trillium and the Toad Trillium. That's the only place in Michigan where those grow.
Really? So they're exceptional. Berrien County, okay, that's a good stop. And with the weather like this, if you're kind of a, I don't know, if you like to take pictures and so forth on your smartphone, or you're more of an amateur photographer, good place to go, eh?
This is the place to go, and it's especially the place to go. Listen, if you're a person who's got a book, you know, and you're keeping track of all the wildflowers you find, this is the only place in Michigan where you can find those particular wildflowers.
That's cool.
If you want another little bit of nature that's right by that area, not 10 miles away, is Warren Woods, which is the last remaining beech and maple climax forest in Michigan.
The last beech and maple? What does that mean? Tell me what that means.
Well, a climax forest is a forest that has never been cut. This has never been lumbered off. The trees are, some of them are over 125 feet tall, and they are, this climax means it's full growth, and this is it's a state park.
So it's what some people would call
pathways through there, and it's a good place to go hunt morels.
It's well, that's a good thing. It's the sort of thing people would call an old growth forest in many parts of the world. An old growth forest, a mature forest, a climax forest. All right, speaking of morels, let's talk about morel mushrooms, because I've been watching this thing on Facebook. Michigan Morels, these people have this little site, and they're booming all over. I give them a little shout out because they're doing a cool thing, and they got like 40,000 followers trying to find out where the morels are. They're starting to boom all over. They're not big yet, but it's happening, and we've got a lot of festivals coming up, right?
We have a lot of festivals coming up. We mentioned last week that there's one in Mesick, one in Boyne City, and one in Lewiston. And, of course, Grayling is another great place to go hunt morels. But, you know, Steve, you don't necessarily have to go up north. The problem with morels is nobody ever wants to tell you exactly where to find them.
I've noticed that.
But there was a legendary morel hunter, a guy by the name of, he was known as Farm Market Freddy, because he always had morels at the farm markets. And he would always search the old abandoned orchards on the Indian Burial Mound Trail at Rose Lake. And that's right near Bath.
Yeah. So he would go through the Rose Lake. It's kind of a swampy area. I've been over there. This is where you check in deer with the DNR oftentimes, right? If you got deer that needs, you want to get it aged or whatever, you go to the DNR Center at Rose Lake is where I always used to go. And
yep,
so
that's where it is.
Those old swampy trails through there is what you're telling me.
There are, but there are some trails that go up into the hills a little bit, and near there's a lot of abandoned apple orchards because that was farmland before it became a wildlife research area.
Well, I can tell you.
Some of those old orchards have never been cut, and, you know, old apple trees is a great place to find morels, and I always heard that's where Farm Market Freddy would go.
I can tell you this. The best morel hunting I've ever done in the state of Michigan was near the small town of Concord. I can guarantee you. So you do not have to go up north to find morels. You can find them in southern Michigan in great quantities. If Freddie can find them, you and I can find them too now.
Absolutely.
So are you a morel hunter, or is that just me? It's something I've kind of taken pride in, and fall mushroom hunting as well. I love it, actually.
Well, I love it too. And with this spring weather, this weather we're having right now is perfect. I'm a lousy morel hunter. I rarely ever find them, but I have a great time out there looking for it, and it's a great way for families to spend a little time out in nature.
So maybe you're the guy that when you get done morel hunting, we're gonna flip your boot over and see which ones you found in the sole of your shoe. I mean, that kind of morel mushroom hunter. Well, I get it.
Yeah, I'm that kind of guy. And the reason I ran across Farm Market Freddy because that's the only place I could get morels.
Well, there you go, Farm Market Freddy. All right, so preview time here because we've got some things on the horizon here. Which is trout season. Trout season not too far away, and every time I think about this, I think about a river runs through it. But the National Trout Festival on the way here in a couple of weeks, correct?
Yep, National Trout Festival, April 27th through 30. This is the first big festival of the year, and it's been going on for more than 80 years up in Kalkaska. And it's not just fishermen either. I mean, they have a fishing contest up there, but they also have kids' events. They even have a golf outing. So if they got a golf outing going, you know, spring is finally here.
Well, you know, do they have it like elephant ears and cool stuff like that? Or
absolutely. They got all that kind of stuff. They have a bike run. You know, it's a big event. It goes on for 4 days, so there's something for everybody.
No,
and if you get tired of that and you still want to hunt morels, I'll tell you another cool place to go, and that's a little bit west of town.
Okay.
There's a place called Seven Bridges Park. Known as the Jewel of Kalkaska County, and it's just off the side of the road. It's on Valley Road. There are bridges that cross a myriad of streams that go through there. It's actually the headwaters of Rapid River. And so what you do is you go out there and look for morels, but take your fishing pole with you because those streams are full of trout.
Well, see, then you've got the whole deal. You've got the trout fillet slathered in morel mushrooms. I mean, that's the whole package, Ron. I got to run, but I greatly appreciate it. Ron Rademacher, if they want to find out more about you, where do they go?
www.michiganbackroads.com.
Ron Rademacher. Hey, thanks, my friend. It was great. Ron Rademacher, michiganbackroads.com. Take a breather. Go see what's cool in Michigan, and we'll be right back right here on the Steve Gruber Show.